And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It is 4 minutes past nine on this Monday. It's the 14th of April. I do hope you're all very well indeed. You're very welcome along to another week of the 9 till noon show. And probably a few groggy heads around this morning, I would say. Many of you out there, because there's so many beautiful golf courses across the Northwest. Many of you partake. Perhaps many of you stayed up to watch Rory McIlroy achieve history last night. What a day's golf it is. It's one of those sort of events that sometimes transcend sport, in that I would say there was a lot of people watching it that sort of maybe don't normally watch golf, because it was so dramatic. And it was really quite remarkable to see Rory McIlroy achieve what only five people have achieved before him, and some of the greats in golf, in winning all four majors, all four golf majors in his career. And you know, to put it into context for those who probably don't watch golf, it would be the equivalent almost of, you know, in terms of what you want to achieve in your life, taking 14 years, effectively 14 years, to climb Mount Everest, to get to the very top of it. It would be a remarkable story, wasn't it? But in sporting terms, that's precisely what he achieved. People have won more majors than him, but there are four sort of separate tests in winning the four majors in golf, and he's passed them all with flying colours. He's 35, which is old enough for a golfer, but still, he was up against a fella in his 40s in a playoff. But it was a remarkable achievement. He's an interesting character, Rory McIlroy, because a lot of people like him, and he's a kind of a divisive character. A lot of people dislike him, but I don't think there'd be many. Would have been wishing him ill yesterday, because obviously it meant so much to him. And these guys are billionaires. I mean, he can't be far off a billionaire anyway. He certainly has hundreds of millions of euros. So the only thing really driving him is to achieve sporting greatness. And he did that. And it's a remarkable achievement for the island of Ireland. And it's a remarkable achievement for Europe as well. And in the golfing world. We'll be speaking to the club professional from his home club in Hollywood a little later on in the programme. And if you want to comment on that, or maybe you watched it and you have something to say, I'll give you our contact details, and it's for anything that you want to discuss. We'll be getting some reaction to fantastic news for the children and the parents of those who were told there was no place for them at Little Angels School on Saturday. I believe it was Saturday, wasn't it? Or was it late Friday? Sorry, late Friday. Ahead of a protest that was due to take place at the Market Square in Letterkenny on Sunday, they were told that a solution has been found. Cabins will be put on the site of the school to accommodate those children. We know that news now in mid-April, so that hopefully should give plenty of time for all the resources that are needed to give the children the best of education. Will be on site and in situ for September. But I know there was great relief amongst the families who themselves have found themselves becoming campaigners and climbing on buses and sleeping out in Dublin and doing radio and newspaper interviews. You know, the stuff mums and dads don't normally have to do, but they have done that and they've succeeded. They have won the fight for their children. And hopefully we'll be speaking to the minister responsible, who passed on that information to them. We will be speaking to him. He's lined up to speak to us and get some reaction from the families as well. So there's an awful lot going on, and we want to speak to you as well on whatever you want to talk about. If it's an issue you want to raise or some good news you wish to pass on, the lines are open for everything. Or are they open, actually? Caroline, we aren't. The lines aren't open. There's no point me giving the numbers at this stage. So the landline is banjaxed. It's an external problem. And we are working to get that resolved. But you can WhatsApp and WhatsApp us and text us on 086 60 25,000. WhatsApp certainly working well. 086 60 25,000 for your WhatsApp. I'll tell you when the phone lines are working again, but you can also email comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the stream, maybe that's a handy way for you to stay involved with what's happening across the Northwest. Or maybe you have someone who is hard of hearing. because we stream the show, and as I said before, hundreds and hundreds of people watch every day across the various platforms and on our website. But the subtitles on Facebook and I believe YouTube as well. And I do know there are people who are hard of hearing that ordinarily wouldn't be able to find out what's happening across the Northwest or be involved in the conversation, but they can watch it and watch the subtitles on Facebook and YouTube live, which means those people are involved as well, which is what excited me about starting to stream. But everyone can watch, and you can watch at home on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, or on Facebook on our two Facebook pages, and on the X platform, Highland Radio Ireland, I believe it is there as well. No excuses. Right, let's see what's making the front and inside of some of the papers today. Hurt, traumatised and heartbroken in the aftermath of the road collision on February 28th that tragically claimed the lives of young men Sean Martin McClafferty, 17, and Jamie Diver, 23. The small rural community of Gortahawk gathered in Austin, Loughalton on Friday evening in a quiet but powerful attempt to begin healing. This is the Donegal News. The Stronger Together event was organised by local man Joe Mungan with the support of Road Victims Support Northern Ireland Donegal, a newly launched charity dedicated to helping the families and friends left behind after fatal road collisions in County Donegal and Northern Ireland. We are people hurting, especially the young people that have been traumatised by losing their friends in such terrible circumstances, Joe explained. And we spoke to Joe on the show on Thursday, I believe it was, or was it Friday? Either way. And you could see it's really, really, really important. And it's really important for particularly for young people, but not just young people, to have that space to sort of maybe discuss how they're feeling, to process the impact these tragedies have. And there's been numerous tragedies to visit that small, tight-knit community. So fair play to Joe in organising that and for the other for the others getting on board with that. On to the Derry News now, and the Department of Health's withdrawal of annual core funding from Derry's Northlands Addiction Treatment Centre has been challenged by the community and politicians across the Northwest. Local councillors have united to press the case for the funding's immediate reinstatement. On to the Nationals now. We'll start with the Irish Times, and in fairness to the papers, they've got the Rory McIlroy pictures and the story on the front of most of the papers this morning. When you consider they had to be printed, had to be put together and printed, presumably in Dublin. It's crazy, really, I suppose, in this day and age that this still happens. But anyway, it's important. It does. I'm not saying it shouldn't. And then bussed or driven all the way from Dublin and put in the shops up here. He lost. Won it, lost it again, and finally, when everyone everywhere was losing their minds, Rory McIlroy went and won it one last time. He's the 2025 Masters champion and becomes one of only six men in history to win the career's Grand Slam. On a day of unrelenting tension and drama at Augusta, McIlroy beat Justin Rose in a playoff. The ups and downs were mind-boggling from first shot to last. It was thrilling stuff, a hell for leather ride on the Rory coaster. He got an astonishing rub of the green on the 11th with his second shot. Looked destined for the pond to the left of the green. That's not how I saw it, but anyway. But somehow held up just a few rolls short of tumbling in. From there, it looked just to be a matter of doing nothing mad. But this is Rory McIlroy and this is the Masters. A terrible approach shot to the 13th found the water and ended with a fourth double bogey of the week. What had looked like a procession was suddenly far too dramatic for anyone's liking, and that shot made no sense at all. But a brilliant approach to the 17th left him a two-putt for birdie. He made it and took a one-shot lead up the last. And after one last errant shot into the bunker, it all came down to a five-foot putt. It slid by on the low side, and we suddenly had a playoff. Justin Rose, who is a English player, he plays on the LIV Tour, I believe. He had had an amazing round himself to get him onto 11 under. They went to a playoff hole. Both of them played two excellent shots to leave themselves two handy putts. Rose missed his. McIlroy's dropped. He won the hole and he won the Masters, and he was delighted. The Irish Daily Mail this morning. Ireland will join a new European military alliance today, days after Russian intelligence gathering ship, the Viktor Lenov, spent time in Irish waters. For some, this will be framed as a watering down of our neutrality. I suppose we have command over an awful lot of European waters, and I see this perhaps as a, you know, logical step that a lot of countries who have a lot of water get together to sort of share information, but others will see it differently. The Alliance of European Nations will share intelligence and information regarding potential threats in EU waters. However, the move has raised concerns that Ireland's neutrality is being undermined by stealth. One defence expert told the Irish Daily Mail, there's no doubt the opposition will characterise it as a step closer to NATO. It doesn't help that the member countries are all in NATO, though a fair-minded person might say it would be very hard not to cooperate with a European country that isn't in NATO. So does that mean I'm fair-minded? He went on, or she went on to say, so you can be sure that Paul Murphy, Sinn Féin, Labour and all that lot will engage in a lot of chatter about NATO by stealth. Is that how you see it? Or do you see it as a logical step? Right, if you've got a young one in your house that is doing the Leaving Cert this year and will be looking for a college place come September, this will be a story, I think, of interest to you. And there's many of you out there. It's the Irish Independent. Fears are growing that as many as 10,000 Leaving Cert deferrers from 2024 with inflated points will compete for top university places against the class of 2025, who grades are being deflated. Now, anytime you had inflated grades, there's always going to be a point whereby the next crew coming through are going to be disadvantaged. And it seems it's going to be this year. And some people tactically deferred from last year as well, knowing this was coming. Leaving Cert grades will be inflated by 5.5% this year, reducing from 7% inflation last year. Around 10,000 students from 2024 have deferred, leading to a potentially more crowded race for coveted university places in courses such as medicine, veterinary and pharmacy. Ross Cree, I'm having a clue what that is, Cistercian College President Colin Maloney said this scenario could leave the 2025 cohort of students on an uneven playing field. There's roughly 60,000 students sitting the Leaving Cert this year, but thousands of students from the 2024 cohort who deferred for a year will also be applying for university courses at the same time, he said. So that's a problem. And the reason it is, the 2024 cohort's grades were inflated to a greater extent, meaning they'll probably have an advantage from the points they were awarded compared to this year's students, which, you know, if you're an ambitious student this year and you've been busting a gut over the last couple of years and you're heading into the exams this summer knowing that there might be people just sitting there waiting with their Leaving Cert scores in their hands waiting to beat you because their points are more inflated than yours, it's a toughie. What do you think about this one in the Irish Daily Star? I wonder, have you sympathy? Middle-ranking Gardaí is set to call for officers to be given protection from civilians filming them as they do their job. So you'd be familiar with this now. Anytime there is any Garda activity, or particularly if Gardaí are policing a protest or whatever it might be, or maybe there's objections to the use of a property in a certain area, there's phones out everywhere. Now, some are just campaigners who video everything, as you would know, and put it on their social media. Others are self-styled citizens journalists. They would say that they're doing an important job as well. But the annual conference of the Association of Sergeants and Inspectors, which begins in County Kerry today, will debate a motion calling on Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan to address the growing issue of citizen journalists and their impact on policing. At present, anyone can film a Garda going about his or her work in a public place. But some officers now say that exposes them to abuse, especially on social media. And a report published last month, we read this out at the time, by the Policing Authority on Public Order Policing, revealed many officers were reluctant to use force in riots in case they or their families' details were shared online. Members expressed concerns for the family members, particularly. Well, the ASDI, which represents more than 62,600 officers of sergeant and inspector ranks, wants the government to take action. A motion at its conference in Killarney wants Minister O'Callaghan to address the issue. It highlights the growing issue of citizen journalists and its impact on policing member safety and well-being, along with public safety and the integrity of investigations. It adds, Ungadashi Akana policy and procedure around social media should centre on balancing the public's right to transparency with the need to protect Gardaí from potential harassment and operational changes. It doesn't actually say how that might be achieved. So how does this work? And this is a problem for the guards. Firstly, they've got body cams, right? So they're revealing their footage, or they have their footage. And, you know, some people might say that there can be two sides to a story. So if you have your own video evidence of it, that backs your side up. It's okay, is it, for Virgin Media or RTE or the mainstream media to go in and film stuff, but not a regular person? Why is that? Some would say it's because you can control the narrative. Others would say, well, there are rules and regs for the media where there isn't for citizens journalists. Do you think there should be better protection for Gardaí? What would that look like? Because the AGSI don't seem to know what it might look like. Or do you think it's fair that if you know, public employees are out there doing a job in public, that it's right that they're held to account by people videoing what they're doing? What do you think on that? 086 60 25,000. The war continues in Ukraine, and I know some people like to try and frame it that, you know, Ukraine is perfectly safe, and much of it is safe. But at the drop of a coin, Vladimir Putin can decide to unleash hell on any part of Ukraine, and he did on the streets of Ukraine on Palm Sunday. Russia slaughtered at least 34 civilians and wounded 117 more. 15 children perished in a Palm Sunday rocket attack on the streets of Ukraine. They used ballistic missiles, and they hit the northeastern city of Sumy at 10:15 a.m. local time. Worshippers were heading to church for the Christian holiday. Moments later, a second warhead struck survivors running for cover and emergency services who went to help. The terrifying so-called double tap on civilians going about their ordinary daily lives was branded an act of absolute evil. These rockets, the ballistic rockets, are very hard to defend against, and they cause incredible destruction. Scores and scores of people wounded, 15 children blown to bits, 34 civilians in total wiped out in that attack in Sumy there. And finally, I know an awful lot of you are following the mystery disappearance of a County Kerry farmer, because it is one of those cases that just doesn't seem to make any sense. And there's ongoing coverage of it in the papers today. In the Irish Daily Mirror, Gardaí are investigating claims that a man was seen working on an SUV belonging to missing man Michael Gain on the day he was reported missing. Officers investigating the baffling disappearance of the 56-year-old from his farmyard in Kenmare, County Kerry, have interviewed several witnesses. They're understood to be probing claims that a man was seen fixing up Mr. Gain's Toyota RAV4 SUV on the morning of Friday, March 21st. The vehicle, which contained the missing man's seemingly abandoned phone and wallet, was subsequently seized by officers later that day and taken away for forensic testing. Sources say a number of people close to Mike went to his farm located near Mull's Gap and just outside Kenmare Town just before midday on Friday, after he had not been seen since the Thursday morning. Upon arrival at the yard, they discovered a man known to Mike underneath the SUV who appeared to be fixing the brake pads of the vehicle, which could be just perfectly normal life. You know yourself, you could have people calling around to work on your house. They don't know you're missing necessarily. But anyway, it's still something to be investigated, no doubt. We're joined on the programme now by GP in Boncrana, Dr. Ciara Steele. Good morning, Ciara. Thank you so much for your time today.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Obviously, we talk about it quite a lot because it's driven by listeners' interactions, but also too by press releases issued from the HSE talking of pressures on Letterkenny University Hospital. It's becoming more frequent now that the HSE claim the hospital is full. Their last release had 34 people ill enough to be admitted to the hospital, no beds for them, 400 or 500 people in the ED over the course of a short number of days. It's not a winter surge now. This is April. It's becoming something of the norm. What's your approach to this from a GP's perspective, Ciara?
Well, from a GP's perspective, we're hearing stories coming in from the patients of protracted waiting times in the ED again. So there was a little bit of a lull, but since January, which was a particular peak as well. But just in the last couple of weeks, we've noticed patients complaining, patients saying, oh, please don't send me to hospital, which, you know, inevitably leads to delayed delayed care and delayed outcomes. But you know, Donegal Daily was highlighting that on April 7th, there was long waiting times in Letterkenny. The Trolleygar this morning, there's 17 patients on trolleys in Letterkenny with 33 delayed discharges. So it's escalating again. And, you know, the patients are suffering because of these long waiting times. We know that if you are waiting longer than 12 hours in ED, your risk of mortality if you're admitted is higher, and also your risk of morbidity if you didn't need to be admitted. So, I mean, there's evidence to say we really need to be meeting the key performance indicators of 6 hours in ED, which a lot of the time is not being met, and the patients are suffering because of that.
And we have many hundreds of people on an annual basis leaving the ED having not received treatment. They could be people that you've sent up, and in your clinical opinion, they need to be seen in an acute hospital. They sit there for, you know, 12, 24 hours and leave. That's very concerning because we don't necessarily know what happens next.
Yeah, exactly. And one of my patients was waiting 34 hours in the emergency department last week. Which is a crazy time to be waiting for anybody. They were in their 60s, but, you know, if somebody's frail and elderly, 75, 80, they become dehydrated, there's lack of services in the waiting area. And again, as you say, if they have to leave, there is an impact on the clinical course of that particular episode of illness, you know, which may have a poorer outcome if the patient hasn't been attended to. So there are programs within the hospital trying to improve things, and AMAU delivery of care there seems to be a little bit successful. But we are having a protracted time expanding the footprint of AMAU. That particular section is working, but despite these mitigations and despite the engagement with the Model 3 pilot program in LUH, there still is this escalation and delayed waiting time. And it's really because demand isn't meeting capacity. There needs to be a bigger hospital. The population is growing. The population is aging. In Letterkenny and Donegal, in comparison to other areas in the country, and that is having a serious effect on demand. A lot of the hinterland and a lot of the patient population of Letterkenny comes from a pubble described area of deprivation. So that, of course, leads to increased comorbidities. And evidence shows that if you have more than two or three comorbidities, your risk of hospital admission is higher. So all of those add up to impact the presentation to Letterkenny Hospital. So that demand needs to drive a response, which is the response is increased capacity, increased consultants, increased non-consultant hospital doctors, and increased space. The Model 3 pilot project is a really good project. It really describes what needs to happen in Model 3 hospitals in order for them to sustain delivery service within the next 10 years. That describes that there should be an increase of 1,000 consultants over the next 10 years. With activity in Letterkenny, that would really amount to introducing 10 consultants per year over the next few years until the target's in 2032. So, you know, that needs to happen, but it needs to be funded. It's recommended. There's policy there, but the policy needs to be enacted.
Yes, and there's very, I mean, we have sight of what's coming. We know where we're at now, but we also have a good idea of where our population will be and our age profile of that population and the medical needs of that population. So there's no excuse here not to be planning for the inevitable, which is positive in many sense. You know, a population that's living longer, but they have to live in good health and in confidence of timely access to a hospital when needed.
I think we already have an elderly population in comparison to the rest of the country, and that population continues to age. We have the chronic disease management program in primary care, which does help to counteract the impact of chronic disease, but that population is still aging, and the presentations presenting to ED can therefore be somewhat more complex because of the fact that they are presenting at a later stage because their chronic diseases are managed in primary care.
I believe you were one of the signatories of the letter that focused on the problems at Letterkenny University Hospital and what needed to be done. We also spoke to consultants at that time who described a hospital in crisis and months away from collapse, effectively. Has there been any improvement in any real terms since you signed that letter?
Well, there's engagement, but and there has been local interventions. And as I said, AMAU is one of the things that is working. But one of the primary considerations from the consultants at that time was an elective surgery unit in Letterkenny. Now, there has been a decision made for that to be located in Sligo. And we feel this is really serious concern that I wanted to highlight to you and to your listeners this morning. Because if the elective surgery unit is located in Sligo and there isn't one in Letterkenny, then it'll be hard to recruit and attract consultant surgeons to Letterkenny. And the knock-on effect of that is if you can't attract emergency cover at night time, you can't have an
Can
emergency
you explain that
department.
to me again? Why would it be difficult to hire in Letterkenny if this unit is based in Sligo?
So the consultants would have to travel 2 hours to do their elective surgery in Sligo, but also that has an impact for patients. I mean, patients don't necessarily want to be treated by a surgeon 2 hours away if they get a complication and then have to go back to the unit in Letterkenny, which doesn't know them. I mean, we see that already with the NTPF, where, for example, I had a patient during the week that was referred to the NTPF. They had a complication, and there was no pathway to manage that complication in Ballykelly. The patient had to come back to me, and now I have to generate a new referral into Letterkenny. So there are complications with remote care of patients, and we don't want remote care of patients. We want our patients to be cared for and the service expanded in Letterkenny and not reduced. But apart from the technical aspects of that, it's the problem with recruiting the emergency surgeons to cover the emergency department, because of the fact of it's already a tough job and they're not going to choose a job that's going to be tougher for them.
Other than maybe someone in Dublin or Galway, and I don't want to be facetious, but sticking a pin in a map and saying that's the Northwest sorted now, because often that's what seems to happen, sticking into Sligo and it doesn't factor in Burton Port or Malin-Head, for an example. Is there any critical mass argument or any other argument for locating it in Sligo, or is it literally just a decision that they've chosen Sligo over Letterkenny?
Well, the decision process about that isn't clear, but certainly the patient cohort is larger in Letterkenny, so I'm not sure what the decision-making process was there. There certainly was no engagement or with stakeholders on that decision, and there needed to be. And that's why I would like to bring that to the attention of the listeners
Well,
this
that's it,
morning.
because it
It's
might seem like a
serious.
complex medical matter, but I don't think GPs or others or even, counselors can do this on their own. It really is up to the public to start advocating for this facility to be based in Letterkenny and to realise that, okay, maybe, because the one thing I've noticed with health, if you're not affected by it right now, you tend to focus on other stuff. And then when it starts to affect you or someone close to you, then it becomes the most significant thing ever. And I think people, if they're interested in this, sort of need to look at the bigger picture of what it might mean if their children or themselves required these services, to get involved in it emotionally, like, because this will affect everyone at some point or other, and they need to start sort of advocating, I think, themselves for this unit at Letterkenny.
100%. And I mean, like, I have children, I have, elderly relatives as well. And, I might need the service myself. It affects everybody. And And it's very hard to think of that on a day-to-day level, you know, when you have the MICA crisis, which does have an impact on ED presentations. I know the psychology service has incorporated questions on how MICA affects you in their intake questionnaires, you know, so it's a very significant impact, and it does impact on the psychology presentations to ED as well. You know, so there's a lot going on for people in Donegal at the moment. The whole situation can be quite stressful. But having said that, we can't ignore that this is coming down the line and is a serious concern. But also the Model 3 project that we're engaged in takes up a lot of time. And this is all voluntary time from consultants and GPs in the community. We don't necessarily want to be doing this. You know, there are people that have paid jobs to do this. We do this out of our free time. But it is to advocate for the patients, but that is to show our serious concerns for what's happening at the moment. So with the Model 3 project, there are good ideas, there are good plans, but they won't happen without funding. And there hasn't been any funding allocated at the moment. So that was the other thing that I wanted people to be aware of and to advocate for, that this project is there, but it needs to be funded. You can't say we'll introduce more beds or you should have more consultants. You have to have the funding there to put those in place.
Now, as I mentioned, statistics from last Monday or Tuesday, you know, 34 people ill enough to need to access a hospital, waiting to get a bed in that hospital. Those people needed to be there. But there is this narrative that it's becoming increasingly more difficult to get an appointment with a GP. Sometimes the people are being told it's 6 or 7 days, we'll get you in. And as I say, the narrative is that people say, well, I can't wait that long, I'm going to go up and sit in the ED. How big a factor in the crisis is capacity in GP services?
Well, I'd say that is certainly an issue from the point of view of it's a small issue. Like, we have taken a lot of capacity of chronic disease management out of the hospital into primary care. But at the same time, that's outpatient capacity. But that is our capacity. Like, we run an on-call service where acute people are seen on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, that's we actually have 60 slots every day for that. So we're seeing increased demand in primary care as well. So I think that there is the increased demand, there is the issue. But the issue at the hospital is beds and capacity within the hospital. Like, we know that if you are running the hospital at less than 85% capacity, then there's going to be delays in the ED. We know that Letterkenny runs at between 97 and 100% capacity. So, you know, there's already a backlog before there's any increased demand anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that demand and footprint, the infrastructure and the staffing needs to be addressed. Like, there were 800 cancelled scheduled care appointments in Letterkenny in the month of January, I think, just because of surge demand. And that's going to escalate again now. And that's why there needs to be an elective surgery unit in Letterkenny so that the emergencies and the acute presentations do get a chance, and the elective surgeries aren't cancelled all the time. The planned care isn't cancelled.
And pardon my ignorance in this question, you'd be satisfied if we did have that facility, it would be very busy?
Yes.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Because some people might say, well if it wouldn't be the demand for it, but that's clear. Finally, how big of a factor, because there's multi factors here, is discharging people from hospital? And I don't mean necessarily delayed discharge in that it takes a while for a letter to get given to a patient. I'm on about maybe if they need step down care, home care packages, family that will receive people home to provide care, because I know sometimes that's not suitable for families. How big a factor is that in the, because we don't want a situation, do we, where we get extra beds and then it just ends up, the hospital ends up taking more slack in the absence of care in the community or home care?
Well, there's a lot of people waiting in the community for home care at the moment. You know, there's long outpatient waiting lists as well. So, I mean, People are always like the community hospital in Buncrana, there's a waiting list for respite and for admission. The home care packages, there's people waiting on community care home packages. Over, 750 families are waiting on home care packages. And that's not even residential beds. There's not enough residential beds for the aging population. But the other aspect is, like, I had a colleague who had a patient admitted for one problem. They had a healthcare acquired infection. And they were ready for discharge, and then they got norovirus, because of outbreaks in the hospital. So the delayed discharges are multifactorial. Some people are waiting for angiograms in Galway. Some people are waiting on neurology consults in Beaumont. So the delay of transfer of care is multifactorial. It's community, it's liaison with the Model 4 hospitals, and it's community services as well. Like, there's OT waiting list and physio waiting list that's off the scale at the moment. So the patient's morbidity is increasing in the community, and they don't have the possibility to recover when they are discharged early from hospital.
Yeah, it's a worrying enough picture. But I mean, I suppose, Ciara, we have to encourage people who need care to get into the hospital. Do you know what I mean? Because we have heard stories of people, if you are, acutely ill, you're seen earlier than those who maybe aren't. It worries
I mean,
it worries me, and I know people who have said they prefer to die in the house than go into the hospital, or that they left once and then never going back. That's concerning. And whilst we need to highlight where there are problems, if you need hospital care, you need to get to the hospital, and you will be well looked after if you get there.
Well, I have to say, like, the standard of care is excellent, the standard of care is excellent. And when people get into the system, there's never any complaints, really. The complaints are far and few between. And, like, we're saying this to support our colleagues in the hospital because we want to drive change and expand the service rather than see it be downgraded.
Very finally, do you think there's anything we could be doing now on site with the resources that we have to shorten those waiting lists, to make the hospital run better?
Well, actually, some of the waiting times have gone down as regard to admissions. So, like, there is a reduced amount of admissions, and that is really because of the functionality of AMAU. But the RCPI suggests that the footprint in AMAU should be 20% of the general internal medicine take. And it's underrepresented. So, like, those things that are working need to be expanded. But certainly, I was with a relative in another hospital where they had MRI running back to back 24 hours. And so radiology service needs to be supported as well, for access to radiology so that diagnostic decisions can be made quicker with the footprint that's there.
And are the resources there if they were better utilised in our hospital?
No, I mean, the resources is staffing. Like, you can say you can open beds, but you need staff to monitor and manage those beds. Like, there have been extra beds opened, but there hasn't been the relevant increase in staffing.
And ironically, and I presume part of this Model 3 pilot project is to make the hospital a more attractive place to work as well. To boost recruitment. Okay, thanks.
And then you're talking about burnout. That's not helpful.
Well, I simply don't know how some people can do what they do. It's astonishing. Yeah. It's amazing. Thank you very much indeed for your time, Dr. Ciara Steele, who is a general practitioner in Buncrana. Dr. Steele's of the view that currently an elective surgery unit is planned for Sligo. There's more demand, greater demand, and it would be operating at full demand if it was located at Letterkenny University Hospital. Dr. Steele and her colleagues are advocating, obviously, for that to be located in Letterkenny. But Dr. Steele says that if it needs to be in Letterkenny, and that they on their own can't necessarily influence its location, and that you need to get involved in this if you're interested in the health service or feel you may ever need the health service into the future, that you need to be advocating with your TDs for the location of this elective surgery unit in Donegal. I'm joined on the programme now by Chris Cook. Hi, Chris. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing all right, Chris. And I suppose now with more and more people having dash cams in their vehicles, we're starting to get more of an insight in to some of the crazy driving that's out there, and it's only pure luck or happen chance or happenstance that you know, you haven't been wiped out, or someone else isn't dead.
Yeah, it was very close. It was very close.
Okay, for those watching the programme, they'll be able to see what we're talking about. So what happened Friday evening?
It's just a normal sunny day for us. Me, the wife and my daughter decided to go to Bunclana and walk out as far as Stirgill out by Father Higgery's Rock. We did that, came back, had a snack at the car, and thought the evening's coming to an end, and we're driving home, taking it nice and steady up the road. And we were on approach to the, what I call the infamous black spot, because in my experience, I've been driving a long time. I remember quite a lot of the accidents that happened at that point. And, you know, I was maybe sitting around 50 miles per hour, just starting to slow down on approach to it. And I could hear a drone. Like, I thought, what? I couldn't even figure what it was, just a loud drone. It didn't sound right. I couldn't see anything in my mirror. I couldn't see anything in the driver's door mirror. And then I couldn't believe a black shadow passed the left side of my car. And it was so close that my wife and daughter screamed, and the gravel was rattling off the side of my car. And he caused a dust cloud, and then this black VW Golf passed the front wing of my car. At this point, he's running out of what there was of a small gravel hard shoulder, and he had it cut out.
And it's, at that point, I think you're being generous calling it a hard shoulder. It's kind of that step back.
Yeah.
It's that step back that you, you that you must have if you build on the side of a road. It's nowhere near the width of a hard shoulder.
And definitely not.
And it expires once the entrance of that property expires. I mean, this is just absolutely crazy driving.
Oh, I still can't believe it. I mean, I've driven that road, you couldn't count how many times, because as I said, I didn't say it in my post, but I said it in some of the comments that were coming. I've been driving from I was 17, and I started driving buses when I was 18, and I spent 37 years driving commercial vehicles, and I have a couple of advanced driving qualifications as well, IAM and stuff like that. So I'm not saying that I can't make a mistake or whatever, but you do your best to try and keep yourself and everybody else safe when you're on the road. And that was the last thing I expected. I mean, that space is so narrow. I wouldn't even expect somebody to try that on a motorcycle.
No. And I'll tell you why your driving experience comes into it, Chris, is you hold your line. Because it would have been very easy for a driver in that position to be startled and steer into the oncoming traffic.
Yeah.
Now, you didn't...
Yeah,
Your line didn't change a bit, but I'll tell you, it would be very easy with that noise and the rattle and the stones hitting the side of the car for you to pull down on that steering wheel and end up driving into oncoming traffic, because it's a narrow stretch of road. At the best of times, it's a very dangerous stretch. But you've no escape route. It would only be to impact other vehicles.
Yeah, no, I was aware of that. As I said, again, over the years and experience, you learn to do that, where most people would maybe apply the brakes when they panic or whatever. I would be conditioned to try and not do that. And I certainly knew I couldn't. I had no leeway room to move out because there was oncoming traffic. I just had to keep going straight. I knew at that point anyway he had got past. I didn't have to do anything. So, but it was still not a very pleasant experience.
This car is identifiable, not in the footage and the way I'm playing it here, but certainly in terms of screen grabs. It's a Northern Reg vehicle. You were driving in the North or the Republic at the time?
I was driving back towards the North, yeah.
Right, okay. So, I mean, Have the police any interest in this footage, or is it the Gardaí, or what? Because this person, you know, God, they need to change their driving behaviours, or they're going to be on the news or on the obituary notices. Yeah. This is crazy stuff.
I understand maybe it was a younger driver, and sometimes younger drivers get a thrill for a bit of speed and whatever. We've all been there when we're young, but that was just totally senseless, dangerous driving. You know, I can't even figure why anybody would try it. And as I said in my post, he didn't just pass me. He passed maybe, I don't know how many cars behind. I'm guessing three or four, but there could have been more. because I couldn't see the full number in the mirror, but there was our carriage behind me, and he didn't pull out from directly behind me and be able to build that amount of speed in such a short time. He had been building speed before he got to me. So well, he had to have passed a number of our carriages before he got to me.
Yeah, if you tried to explain that to someone who wasn't able to look at the video, you wouldn't get the full gravity of what you're talking about here. I'm thinking on too of your daughter and wife in the car, because they were on the inside, and that car must have passed very, very close. The noise of the engine, the scattering of the stones, you know, it would traumatise you, that would.
Well, my daughter's 12 years old, and hours later, still at home, she come over and just quietly said to me, "Dad, she says, I'm still thinking that when that happened," she says, "I thought we were all going to die." You know, it's not very nice. You know.
No. Chris, thanks for sharing the story with us. I do appreciate it.